From automated assembly lines to smart factories, manufacturing is going digital and fast. If you want to stay relevant, you need the right tech skills. CBT Nuggets helps you get there with practical, easy-to-follow IT training. Build in-demand skills in networking, cybersecurity, and system automation without investing in costly hardware or struggling with complicated setups. Our short, engaging videos and hands-on virtual labs make learning simple and effective. Whether you're a technician on the floor, a manager leading teams, or an engineer optimizing systems, CBT Nuggets fits your schedule and meets you where you are. Train at your own pace, from any device, wherever it works for you. And with new content added regularly, there's always something relevant to learn. Join thousands of professionals who are leveling up their careers with CBT Nuggets. Right now, you can start a 7-day free trial and explore everything we offer, no commitment required. Go to cbtnuggets.com today, because in modern manufacturing, better tech skills mean better opportunities.
I'm John Batchelor with Nick Bunker, the historian. In the Shadow of Fear is the new book, America and the World in 1950. Stalin in Moscow is watching the events in Washington very carefully. He has informants everywhere, as Nick says dryly at one point. They don't have to spy. They can just read the front pages because everybody's spilling everything at the same time. Drew Pearson's defending McCarthy. The McCormick papers, the Chicago Tribune, and the New York Daily News are defending McCarthy. And to follow the president at this point is easy because he has his defenders in the media everywhere, especially the New York Times, who Mr. Kroc presents him as a great success. The president is worried about the coal strike and the steel strike and the unions, but Stalin is watching for his advantages. He's getting information from Pyongyang. This is Kim Il-sung, the grandfather of the dictator here in the 21st century. Kim Il-sung fought with the Soviets, is my understanding, and then at the end of the war took advantage of the collapse of the Japanese occupation of Korea that had been going on for most of the century and gobbled up half the peninsula and stopped, or was stopped. Now he wants to keep going. Nick, what was Stalin's first opinion when Kim Il-sung applied for weapons and arms and leadership to take the rest of the peninsula?
Well, initially, Stalin was very reluctant. Now, the situation was this. Korea had been divided along the 38th parallel in 1945 with the Americans on one side and the Russians on the other. The Russians and the Americans had both withdrawn their forces, but nevertheless, the peninsula was still divided. As you had Kim in the north, and you had Syngman Rhee, the president of South Korea, in the south. And throughout 1949, there were actually border clashes going on along the 38th parallel. There were various mountains, key locations, strong points, and so on. And there were little battles being fought between the North Koreans and the South Koreans for these various strong points. There had also been an insurgency going on in South Korea. That was an issue too. Now, Kim Il-sung's view was that South Korea was weak, that it was divided. He believed he had a fifth column inside South Korea. He believed that the time was ripe for the reunification of the peninsula by force. He believed the South Korean army was weak. Now, Stalin initially was very skeptical about this. This would be talking, we'll hear about the fall maybe October, November, December 1949. Stalin was very skeptical about this. He didn't believe that Kim Il-sung was capable of making a successful invasion of the South, and he didn't necessarily see the strategic rationale for it either. What happened then was that in January 1950, Stalin changed his mind. And this is a very important moment when at the end of January 1949, Stalin sent a telegram to Pyongyang authorizing Kim Il-sung to go ahead with planning and effectively undertaking to give Soviet support. And that moment is a critically important one. And the question obviously is, why did Stalin change his mind? And there are a number of reasons for that. One was, as I was saying earlier, that Stalin by now was committed to the notion of Asia as being the best location for continuing, if you like, the communist struggle, the expansion of communism. He believed there were possibilities in Vietnam, there were possibilities in Japan also, there were possibilities in Malaya, there were possibilities all across the region. And it would make a certain amount of sense from Stalin's point of view to back Kim in an armed reunification of the peninsula. For one thing, Korea was strategically very important. If you just look at a map and see where Korea is in relation to Japan, bear in mind that, of course, North Korea is actually not far from the Soviet base at Vladivostok. It made some sense. It made some sense also because the South Korea although it was at this stage nothing like what it is today, not the least bit of an industrialized country, it was actually quite an important supplier of foodstuffs, rice and grain and so on. This would all be very useful for strengthening the various communist states in the east of Asia. But also the trouble was that the United States had given various signals which suggested to Stalin that the United States would not actually come fully to the aid of South Korea if South Korea was attacked. Now, the most notorious of this is what happened on January the 12th, 1950, which is when Dean Acheson, the Secretary of State, gave a notorious speech at the press club, in National Press Club in Washington, D.C., at which he appeared to leave South Korea outside the kind of defensive perimeter of the United States in Asia. It wasn't really true, because actually Acheson didn't really say that. Acheson did actually say that if Korea were attacked, America would come to its aid. But it wasn't entirely clear. There was a degree of ambiguity and vagueness in the speech. And that may have been part of Stalin's thinking. But there are other things going on as well. For example, we mentioned something earlier on, the Korean aid bill. There was a piece of legislation that the administration were trying to put through Congress in early 1950, a bill that would have permitted a substantial amount of economic and some military assistance to South Korea. And that was voted down by a combination of Republicans and fiscally conservative Democrats. And there were various reasons for that. One reason was because they wanted to ensure that some of the aid went to Taiwan as well. But they voted down the Korean aid bill. And that was also an important moment, I think, which had a bearing on Stalin's thinking. Plus, in addition to that, Stalin, of course, by the end of January 1950, had his meetings with Mao Zedong. He was much happier about Mao Zedong as a potential ally and partner in Asia. He had more confidence in Mao Zedong. And he also felt that that was important, because if Kim Il-sung were to invade the South, you need to ensure that the Chinese forces might be able to help him if things went wrong. So a number of reasons that came together in January 1950, which led Stalin to change his mind and to authorize Kim to begin planning for an invasion. And of course, that was a very fateful moment, because from that moment, really, the die was cast. From that moment, it was really only a matter of time before the Korean War broke out. But of course, the difficulty was that, of course, in Washington, they had no idea of this. I mean, they really had very little insight into what was going on in the mind of Stalin, in the mind of Mao, in the mind of Kim Il-sung. Stalin, on the other hand, always had a lot more information about what was going on in Washington, because all he had to do really was to read the newspapers, because the American newspapers were always full of leaks and speculation and intelligence, some of which was very accurate, about the kind of confusion that existed in high places in Washington at the time.
So we have McCarthy, who's about to start his hearings, accusing Americans in the State Department of being communist sympathizers, communist agents, just like Alger Hiss. We have the B-36, which is too slow. We have research for the super bomb underway. We have a coal strike. We have a steel strike. We have America at the movies watching the Technicolor of Samson and Delilah. And we have at the National Security Council in these days a document under construction. It's extremely famous. To this day, it dominates the conversation. What it outlines is the challenge ahead and what is to be done. It's called NSC 68. And when we come back, what is it? Did they know about it at the time? And what did they do about it? This is CBS Eye on the World with Nick Bunker in The Shadow of Fear, America and the World in 1950. I'm John Bashlett.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Stephen at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.